guys, I'm Em from the fashion and beauty blog, The Lipstick Fever. When I moved to London over a year ago, I felt like there weren't a ton of obvious resources for women moving abroad or moving cities. My biggest source of strength and growth for my big move was through the inspiring and amazing women from all over the world that I've been meeting. Hi, everyone, and welcome back to the Big Move podcast. I am your host, Em Roberts, from the beauty blog, The Lipstick Fever. Today's guest is Pamela Marshall. She is a clinical esthetician and the co-founder and managing director of Mortar and Milk. Renowned for her no-nonsense approach when it comes to superior skin health, she's a certified level 4 clinical esthetician. Pamela fuses her scientific skincare knowledge with age-old beauty truths and leaves no stone unturned when it comes to her consultation, diagnosis, and treatment of skin woes. With her pursuit of an honest and homely beauty haven, her space Mortar and Milk was born. Nestled in leafy Parsons Green, southwest London, Mortar and Milk is a charming skin clinic and apothecary that attracts a loyal and well-informed clientele in London. Welcome to the podcast, Pamela.
Thank you for having me.
I'm so excited to be here today, and I just had an amazing treatment and facial with you.
Yeah, it was good.
It was good. So we're going to get into all of that. But first, we'll start with a couple little icebreaker questions. Okay, so what are the first three things you do when you wake up in the morning?
Oh, the thing is, I listened. I'm not going to answer the way most people answer. Okay, the first thing I do is I probably grumble a little bit. I'm not a morning person. My dog wakes us up, and usually I'll reach one arm over the bed and just scratch him a little bit, and then eventually my husband will take him out. The next thing I do is brush my teeth because I hate a gross mouth. And then I shower. But I want to say the fourth thing I do, because my husband is glorious, and when he gets back from the dog walk, we get up a half an hour early every day just so we can have a half an hour in bed to have cappuccinos. So he makes me a cappuccino in bed every single day. That's my sort of wellness thing, is to just sit there and have probably something that's not great for me, but I do it anyways.
I mean, what a dreamboat he is.
Oh my God, yes.
Wow.
He's a dreamboat.
Okay, cool. I love that. Second icebreaker is, what is your favorite alcoholic beverage?
So I'm really bad with alcohol in the sense that I don't, I'm going to try not to make this long. I had a really, when I was 19, not a great experience.
Okay.
So I didn't drink again until I was 43.
Okay.
And I tried red wine. So what I drink.
You seriously went that long? Wow.
Yeah, it scared me. You know when you have no memory of a night?
Okay.
Yeah.
It was one of those?
One of those.
Okay.
I have no memory.
Okay.
And it freaked me out.
Wow.
So from 19 to 43, I didn't drink.
Wow.
And then someone said to me, you know, you can have a glass of wine. And I went, oh, okay. So red wine is really the only thing I drink.
Okay. I love that. And it's packed with antioxidants, isn't
it? Yes, it is.
So it's better for you anyway. Okay, cool. So we'll kind of just get into your background and where you're from. And when I first walked in, I'm like, I love that you're also an expat. So you are an American.
Yeah.
Where are you originally from, and sort of where did you grow up?
So I was born in San Francisco, but I grew up with my mom in the Santa Cruz Mountains. So there's this little town called Felton, and it's in the Redwood Forest. And she was one of the original hippies, and I had this quite magical but also kind of awful childhood with her. She was really ill. So that's the awful part. She was magical. It was just this very, very hippie existence. And then when she died, we moved to Portland, Oregon with my dad. And that was a completely opposite experience. You know, it wasn't in the Redwood Forest, although Portland's really beautiful and I love it.
I've heard,
But, and then when I was 18, I moved back to San Francisco.
Okay.
To go bug my brother while he was at university. And then he eventually convinced me to go to university.
Okay. So you're kind of a Western girl through and through.
Yeah. I mean, most of my life has been in California.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then I know we literally just talked about this, but what prompted your move to London, and then when did that occur for you?
So I moved here almost exactly 9 years ago. I'll keep it brief. I came here one time with my ex-husband when I was much younger and fell in love with the city and kind of sort of vowed to myself that I would move here one day. And we divorced after 20 years. And so I thought, well, this is my moment. And decided to get my MBA and was going to do it when my kids were at university. They were approaching university, but not quite there. And they said, no, we want to do it with you. So the kids and I moved over.
Okay.
It's incredible.
And that was, you told me, 9 years ago?
9 years ago, yeah.
Okay. So when you look back at sort of your initial move, I always love to talk about this, especially with expats. Looking back at your move from the States, what were some of the biggest challenges that you sort of endured?
Getting from A to B on public transport. Like, okay. I love public transport and I think it's the coolest thing ever, but everything takes longer. And every expat I've ever talked to says there's an adjustment period with that you can't just get in your car and go 15 minutes to go wherever. That yeah. It's like you have to schedule your day around your journey.
Yeah.
That was really hard. When you go to the grocery store, I don't know what they call it here, but we call it obviously a grocery store.
Right, grocery store. Absolutely. Yeah. Stop and Shop, where I grew up.
Yeah. Like, that's... When they would say things like, you all right? That confused me massively.
Me too. If I'll share a quick tidbit, yeah. The first time that someone said, you all right, hun, it was actually like a work opportunity with like a PR and I was just brand new to London and I took it the complete wrong way. And I remember I went home and I talked to friends and my husband, Nick, and he's like, that's how are you? Like, yeah. It's not meant to be, but I completely relate. So anyway, continue.
Yeah. So that was, it took me forever to get used to that. Mm-hmm. I think it was pretty easy. Everything's expensive here except for food. Actually, food is so much cheaper here than it is in the States.
It is cheaper.
Oh my gosh, dramatically. But for the most part, it was, you know, for the first year we were here, it was like a honeymoon phase. It was awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm with you. You have that honeymoon stage in kind of any new city, but especially London, because it can feel really magical.
Yeah.
Are there things that you love most about life in London? And then in contrast, maybe some things that you miss about like life in California.
Yeah. So I love the architecture and the history here. I'm always befuddled when I'm walking. So I still do this with my husband. We'll be walking through town like on a Sunday afternoon and I'll just look up and I'll be like, oh my God, I'm in London. I'm actually here. Because you look at these buildings or when you see something that shows where maybe a bomb had landed in the war, we don't have that in America. We don't have that constant reminder where we do here. So I find it, the history and the architecture inspiring. I miss my family. I miss my nieces and nephews fiercely. I miss Mexican food.
Oh
my God.
Too.
I miss Haas avocados. Mm-hmm. Oh, Mexican food.
Yeah, me too. Especially, yeah. I'm sure coming from California, even more so. So with you. It's tricky to find.
It is really tricky. Yeah. And everyone says, oh, you've got to try this place and oh, you've got to try that. And it might be really, really good, but it's not authentic.
Yeah, yeah, I'm so with you.
Yeah.
So we'll kind of get into your career. I'm really, really curious to know sort of when you knew that, you know, being an esthetician was your calling. Did it start at like a really young age or what did that kind of look like?
Yeah, it was strange. It wasn't my calling at all. I was a journalist and I was working freelance for this group of newspapers in sort of San Francisco, Sacramento, and San Jose. And I had my second child and I got really bad cystic acne, really bad. I couldn't solve it. I tried lots of treatments, lots of products, lots of everything. And 5 years later, still struggling with it. Older brother still calling me pizza face. Thanks, Jack.
brutal.
And it was my gynecologist that sort of helped me sort it out. And he introduced me to a nutritionist who, taught me about gut health. And it was getting my gut sorted that changed my skin radically. And it was a revelation for me because I wish I could remember her name because I feel like she would have written a book because she would have been a pioneer. This was in the 90s.
Right.
And I said to my ex-husband at the time, I said, I need to like change my job. This is, I've got to do this. His family struggled with acne growing up. I knew our kids were going to get acne. Mm-hmm. And so I quit and I went back and retrained and opened up a clinic in Northern California. And that's kind of how it all started. And I love skin. I'm a nerd and a geek when it comes to skin and ingredients and science. So I totally approach it from that aspect.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. From your own experience too.
Yeah,
completely. Yeah. Is acne as common nowadays as it was maybe back when you
It's worse. So when I first started, I did mostly anti-aging treatments. I had very few inflammatory or acne clients. I had them, but not in comparison, it was minor. I say this with trepidation, but I'm going to say it anyways. The food industry has ruined our bodies. They have a lot to speak for themselves. We are in a time when food is fast. Even healthy food is fast. Healthy fast food is much better than unhealthy fast food. I'm not negating. There's nothing better than something like Detox Kitchen or
by Chloe or something like that.
But our bodies can't take what we take in. We weren't created to absorb it. And when you have inflammation in the skin, or in the body, you're going to have inflammation in the skin. So it's much worse now. 90% of my clients have some kind of inflammatory condition that I'm working on.
Wow.
Whereas it was the reverse before.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so in your bio, I read that it was really important to you that getting recertified in the UK was a really big priority for you. Can you share maybe why that was? And then some key differences maybe between like the skincare world in the US versus over here.
Yeah. So it's an interesting one. And I whenever I say something a little bit difficult, I say it with love in my heart. Beauty therapy. There's beauty therapy and then there's aesthetics. And beauty therapy in the UK kind of covers everything. So you learn about skin, you learn about massage, makeup, I think nails. Mm-hmm. In the US, you pick one thing. So I was an esthetician. I only studied skin. So when you compare those two, again, love in my heart, I've chosen to live in this country. the training in the US is far better. Far more scientific. Let's put it that way. It's not as broad, but it's far more scientific than the beauty therapy training here. However, the advanced training here is excellent. And that's what I wanted to do. I'm not a beauty therapist. I couldn't do massage if you paid me. Not because I don't want to. I just don't know how. But the advanced aesthetics world in the UK is excellent. And so that's what I wanted to do. So I, when we decided to do this business, I just thought I'm not just going to say that I'm a California trained esthetician.
Sure.
I want to be trained in the UK as well. So, I threw myself into it.
Okay. That makes a lot of sense though. And so we're sitting here in your beautiful clinic, Mortar and Milk. So when and, sort of why did you launch it?
I launched it because when I first came here, I didn't think I could treat, I was told that it didn't cross borders. It was not true, but that's what I was told at the time. And so I worked, as a consultant. I worked for, George Hammer and Tracy Woodward, who, ran Urban Retreat. And then I kind of moved into consulting with brands. And in that consulting with brands, I learned about how things were formulated. I learned about how the industry works, and it didn't set well with my therapist brain at all. And I was at an event one time at a store, which I will not name, where I saw something happen to somebody who'd been invited to the event, and it was heartbreaking. And to the point where I had to stop. I couldn't just allow it to continue. And I had to stop this conversation, and it's too long of a story, but I came home from that experience and I said to my husband, oh my God, I have to get back in the treatment room. I cannot do this side of the industry. It just messes with me completely. Mm-hmm. And so he said, write a business plan. So I did. And I wrote it and I sent it around to people and nobody paid attention. And then he's a graphic designer and did a lot of work for P&G products. So he spent many years on Max Factor and he took my business plan and made it pretty. And that's how we decided to work together, is that whole, because as soon as we sent it out again, everyone paid attention to it because it was pretty.
Sure, sure. Yeah,
made me mad.
Okay. I have so many more questions about Mortar and Milk and Skin, and we'll get to that. But sort of before we kind of transition into that, what has been your experience kind of bringing your career over to London and maybe some biggest challenges for you?
I actually think coming to London with my career has been a great thing. So in California, I was a little fish in a big sea. And London is... it's not a small sea. I don't mean it that way. It's just people pay attention here more. And I, having worked on the other side of the industry, I knew a lot of people. And I will say wholeheartedly that Caroline Hirons helped put me on the map. She and I are friends and we knew each other through consulting work. And it's because of her that people started coming to see me. So it was actually easier here than it was in the U.S., it probably took me about 2 years to fill my books in the US. It took me a quarter of that time to fill my books here.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And it's just because I was much more well connected. It is okay. A smaller place, but it's a more, I'm not going to use the right word, not glamorous. Mm-hmm. People pay attention.
Sure.
You know, everything's happening in London. So sure. People talk and it passes. Far more successful here than I was in the States.
Sure.
I mean, I was successful in the States. I raised two kids, but I just know more people here.
Sure. Oh, well, that makes a lot of sense. And you're kind of right in a sense, like London is, it's a bit more like saturated, although it's like geographically, like it's much larger than New York City. It's still like, as far as I guess industries go, it feels a little bit smaller in each kind of vertical, depending on what you work in.
Yeah.
So back to Mortar and Milk, like who are your main clientele? And then what are you, Pamela, mainly kind of known for, do you think, in the skincare world?
So my main clientele, well, it started out with just locals here in Parsons Green. And I am forever indebted to Parsons Green for helping us grow. Because we started out with just getting a lot of moms, and moms talk to each other.
Yeah, of course.
That's a super groovy thing when you're trying to build a business. Also, Fulham has this weird history of growing entrepreneurs. It's like a little bit of a Midas touch. There's a number of brands that have started here that have gone on to be very successful. That's not the whole reason why we chose Parsons Green, but it definitely was a part of the equation. So it started with these moms, and then of course I knew Caroline, and she talked about us, you know, in the kindest of ways, and that was really helpful. But also, this area has a lot of Instagrammers and Made in Chelsea people, so we have a lot of those clients.
Sure.
And
of course that helps with creating buzz and
I mean, completely.
Mouth.
Yeah, completely. One of my, I'm not really sure I'm supposed to, but he talks about it. Josh Patterson from Made in Chelsea.
Okay.
He was one of my early clients, as was Sam. All right, Sam, I'm talking about
you. I just saw
Sam
on your Instagram as
well.
Can't
forget about Sam. he was... he's become a family member.
Okay.
Josh. So has Sam. Sam, you have too. And he also kind of spread the word, and then it just kind of went from there. You know, when things, you sort of get this snowball effect and then it starts rolling. So
yeah.
We were pushing the snowball uphill and now it's rolling downhill and we're trying to catch it. Now, what was the second question?
What are you mainly known for?
Acne, inflammatory skin.
Okay.
I can treat all skin, and I always have to say this to people. I do, I'm good at all skin, but
sure.
I think because we're quite, we're a little bit Sherlock Holmesy here in investigating everything. Acne sort of my thing. I always joke that the hashtag is acne is my bitch. I'm going to name a book after that one.
Yeah. Okay, perfect. And all of your treatments, they're completely bespoke. You and I literally just spent, oh my gosh, over 2 hours together.
Yeah.
So That was incredible. So basically, I came in and we talked through so many different things, but I'll kind of let you share what is a first-time treatment and experience like for a new client that you have come in?
It's always at least 2 hours. We do, because I'm not a good time manager, we do keep a lot of space between each client because I want to be able to go over. If I've got somebody who's got an extreme condition, I want to have that time to go over. We talk about everything from gut health to the products they're using to lifestyle things like how often you wash your sheets. People are gross. I mean, I say that with love. Mm-hmm. People are not washing their sheets enough. They're not cleaning their phones. I'm not going to go into that. That's just too long and arduous.
But feel free.
I literally just try to look at every possible thing. So sure. When someone's got acne in a certain area, I might ask them to show me how they wake up in the morning. What position are they in? Where are their arms? You know, if you think about what if you put a body oil on at night before you go to bed and you wake up in the morning and it's been a hot summer's night and you're sweating and you've got that oil sitting on your face, you're likely to get blackheads in that area or breakouts. So right. We go down to the minutiae in a consultation. Then we have this camera that takes 2D photos. So it kind of shows us what's happening down in the deeper layers mm-hmm. of the skin. And then we create the treatment. So the treatment will always be based on the consultation and the pictures. Mm-hmm. And no two treatments are really the same. When I get a client who comes in regularly, their bookends might be very similar because I know those ingredients work for them. But in the middle, I adjust because we always have to adjust with the skin. And each time they come in, I will say things like when I greet them upstairs, I check their face. I look for inflammation. I do when they smile, are they going red? Are they more acneic? Or I'll ask things like, how was your day? How's work? Is it stressful? Because it tells me they're going to be more, if someone's more stressed, they're more likely to be broken out, but they're also more likely to feel sensations bigger. So I might pre-warn someone, say if they're stressed out and they're on their period, you're going to feel this more than you did last time.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's important to understand like what's going on right now for you and then what's your lifestyle like?
Yeah.
I think it's such an interesting and unique approach. So on that note, we were talking before about like clean products. And I know when I said that, you were like, well, I don't 100%.
You can totally repeat what I said.
But okay, in general, what is your approach to skincare? What are the mix of products, I guess, that like you use on your clients and that you really believe in?
Yeah. So if I'm being honest, that's such a British saying.
it really is.
It is.
But I'll take it. We'll take it.
I only deal with clinical skincare. If other people want to use a mixture of things, I'm totally groovy with that. When I'm dealing with an inflamed skin, I will only use clinical skincare. Clinical skincare penetrates past beyond the dead layers. So you've got your stratum corneum and your stratum lucidum. Anything that penetrates beyond that is considered a drug or clinical. If it is a drug or clinical, it cannot be sold on the high street. You cannot buy it in a store. Therefore, yes, it is ineffective. You cannot treat inflammatory skin with product that only sits in your two outer dead layers. So that's kind of my thing. And there's some incredible clinical brands out there. And do you know what? The reality is most clinical brands, bar one or two, are actually moderately priced. They may have ugly packaging. They're not going to look pretty on your shelf. They may not smell pretty, but they do the job that they actually say they're going to do. The time it takes to make a clinical product versus a high street product. And that's anything from sort of anything you'd get at Boots or Superdrug all the way up to Harrods, Space NK, Selfridges, the time it takes because of clinical trials and stabilization testing is dramatically, dramatically longer. I know clinical brands spend at least 18 months to 2 years just testing a product.
Right, totally.
So, and I'm also not into naturals. I like synthetics for the skin. I love naturals going into the body. So I'm really into food state wellness. I'm into my whole belief on the food system is eat anything that's made with love. If it's not made with love, don't ingest it. I believe wine is made with love and yes, coffee.
We can agree on that.
but synthetic ingredients are actually less irritating to the skin than non-synthetic ingredients. They're made purposely to not irritate. So let's use mandelic acid as an example. Mandelic acid comes from bitter almonds. If you came to me and you had a nut allergy and I was using a natural form of mandelic acid, you couldn't have it. And let's say you had severe acne, I couldn't use it on you. And mandelic acid is amazing. Oh, I hate that word. It's incredible sure. for acne.
Sure.
Synthetic mandelic acid, mm-hmm. you could use. It's going to cause no negative reaction. So I have a lot of clients that have nut allergies and I use it on them beautifully and they're able to use it at home and clear up their acne. Mm-hmm. So I will always stick with synthetic. And I know that word synthetic versus natural. We have this belief in synthetic skincare mm-hmm. is actually bad, but I want to remind you that anything you buy on the high street can't actually penetrate. So all of that talk about products getting into your system is not true. It can't mm-hmm. because if it is, then it's a drug.
Right.
So always remember there's that line of delineation. If it penetrates, it's actually a drug and can't be sold in a high street store. So synthetic only.
Okay. And then when we talk about clinical products, where can we get those? So you were saying obviously in a clinic such as yours, you can get a clinical product, but they're also sold online. Obviously there are tons yes. of brands.
Yeah. To the bane of everyone's existence. And actually it's not a bad thing that they're sold online. It is a weird EU thing that you have to buy them in clinics.
Okay.
But that you can buy them online and I don't understand it. And I can't even try to begin to explain mm-hmm. why that's essentially okay. In the US, we have more access to clinical products.
Sure.
But here, there, and in the EU, there's a line. Why online doesn't fit into that line? I have no idea.
Okay, that's really interesting.
But it is generally clinics are online. So we okay. We sell online. We also sell in clinic, but we also have clients who will buy from us originally, and then they'll go to say, like Face the Future Derm Store, because maybe their budget isn't, you know, I'm not allowed to sell at a discount, mm-hmm. but I totally understand when someone's just trying to get by
and, right.
you know, I get it. I've yeah, been there.
Totally. So what is kind of the basis of like a good skincare routine if we're kind of like going back to basics?
So cleansing with anything that's creamy, balmy, milky, oily. When you use, now, remember, this is a generalization because sometimes I will change my mind on this depending on the skin.
Sure.
When you use a foaming cleanser, you run the risk of removing your acid mantle. Your acid mantle is like a door. It protects your skin. When you remove that, we can cause something called transepidermal water loss. Tool is what they use in a lot of reporting. Evaporation, essentially. It's a fancy term for evaporation, and it can dehydrate the skin. So I will always, even with the most acneic skin, I will mm-hmm. always have them on a creamy, balmy, milky cleanser. Always remove with a flannel washcloth in our parlance.
Okay, sure.
There's this thing about people splashing. Splashing doesn't get cleanser off. And I, for lack of time, I'm not going to go into my demonstration that I normally do, but you got to use a flannel.
Okay.
I don't understand why people don't use flannels.
Okay.
So many people splash. Remove it with a warm flannel.
Washcloth.
Yeah, washcloth.
Or flannel.
Yeah.
Depending on who's listening.
I know. And sometimes they'll say, do you think I should use a muslin or a flannel? I'm like, I don't know the difference. just cut up a towel. I don't really.
Right.
Like just a washcloth. That's what I know.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. I don't know the difference between a muslin and a flannel.
I don't either.
Okay. So that's, I think, really, really critical in terms of getting your day's grime off or your night's grime. When we sweat at night, we've got a buildup of bacteria in our beds, dead skin cells, pollution that's been on our hair, and we're just rolling in it every night. So you've got to get it off using a really hydrating serum and then a moisturizer that's hydrating. If you have acne, there's got to be some element of actives in there. And then SPF. I'm a four-product girl. I only use four products on my skin. Every single product I use has PHAs in it. They're my jam. Polyhydroxy acids are, I think, the greatest ingredients ever invented. There was an article recently that said PHAs are the new ingredients for 2019. And I had a little chuckle inside because actually PHAs have been around since the 90s. but no one was using them bar one particular company. Mm-hmm. And it's because they had the patent on it. And now they're kind of coming off patent. So people are getting a hold of them and using them in, so I shouldn't say no one was using them, but you'd see it like on the bottom of the inky list.
Okay.
Now, because they're a little bit easier to get a hold of, mm-hmm. people are putting it sort of more abundantly in their products. Lactobionic acid is a bionic polyhydroxy acid and is often used in organ transplants to preserve that organ between bodies. PHAs keep the skin in pristine condition. I think they are, I like them better than retinols. I like them better than AHAs. They're incredible.
Okay. And can we find those in products both in the high street as well as clinical?
Yes. Yeah, so clinical, you're going to see them at the top of the ingredients list. Okay. The high street's not quite there yet.
Okay.
It's getting there. Glossier released, was it the solution like a year ago, year and a half ago? Not a fan.
Okay.
If anyone from Glossier is listening, remove some of the AHAs, keep that gluconolactone in there and it'll be unbelievable.
Yeah.
But they were kind of the first company that went, right, we're going to use a lot of a PHA. And okay. I applaud them for that.
Okay, cool. And then in our skincare regime, are there like a couple key products that are really going to keep our skin looking like youthful and like plumping? Like, and like, what are those products?
SPF is probably the best thing you can ever, ever do for your skin in terms of youthfulness and aging. So UVA is out every day. It doesn't matter if it's raining, if it's snowing, there is UVA exposure going into our skin. Our phones have, our Apple phones or our smartphones have a UVA on the weather part. If you scroll down, it'll show a UV index and it changes throughout the day. Pay attention to your UV index because even on a cloudy day, it can get really bad. There was recently, like a week and a half ago, we were looking at the UV index for London. It was 7, mm-hmm. but it was raining out. 7's not great.
Wow.
So making sure that we wear UV protection every single day, no matter what the weather is. And I like an SPF 30 or higher. Mm-hmm. And then making sure that you get, when your skin is hydrated, and I don't mean just your epidermis, I mean your dermal layers, when they're hydrated, your skin functions better. Everything functions better. So if we can keep the skin hydrated, really properly hydrated, it functions better. So making sure you're using a clinical hydrator, mm-hmm. but also making sure you're getting plenty of water and essential fatty acids in your diet. Mm-hmm. So the skin needs water hydration and lipid hydration, not just topically, but internally as well. And I think people forget about those EFAs, getting mm-hmm. those in every single day.
Okay. Are you familiar with ELTA? I think they're a clinical, a skincare brand and they have an amazing sunscreen. And I bought my last bottle at my dermatologist in New York. Elta MD.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
It just came to my mind. I completely forgot about that sunscreen, but it's such a good one.
It's a good one. Okay. HelioCare is an incredible sunscreen.
Okay, cool.
I don't suit HelioCare because I have oily eyelids and it just, even the oil-free one makes my makeup go everywhere.
Okay.
But it is phenomenal. When I take someone's picture and they've got HelioCare on, I have to do 3 or 4 washes just to get it off because it won't take the pictures. That's how great it is.
Okay. But where can we buy HelioCare?
Mostly clinics. But you can also buy it online.
Okay.
Exuviance is sheer refining fluid, SPF 35, fantastic for acneic skin.
Okay.
Brilliant.
Okay, perfect. So when it comes to anti-aging, what should we really be focusing on in our skincare routine? Are there crucial ingredients or like products that we need to have in our regime?
Yeah, it's a tough one because if I make a blanket statement, then people go, oh, that's what it is. Okay, so first of all, I want to say retinol is amazing, but retinol is overused. So when I have someone on a retinol, and it's actually very rare, I have someone on a retinol, I don't use retinol. I'm almost 52 and I don't use it. When I have someone on a retinol, we have to pinky swear. I genuinely make them pinky swear that they will not use it more than I tell them to use it.
Sure.
So most people, I start them on once a week and I only have them use a clinical one because it's stabilized. I've had too many people come in with retinol reactions from high street brands where I have to then get them under the LED because they're completely gone bonkers. Once a week for a month. And then the most I allow someone to use it is twice a week. And sometimes we never make it to twice a week. Sometimes it's just once a week. Too much of a good thing is too much. Mm-hmm. Too much cake, too much.
Yeah.
Retinol's awesome for anti-aging, but too much of it actually causes a lot of inflammatory conditions.
Yeah. You're not the first person that said that.
Yeah.
Too.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, and we're all overusing actives. So we're all overusing AHAs and retinols. So in terms of preserving the skin, I'm going to go back to the PHAs, use PHAs. That's all I use. Vitamin C is really good, but it's another one. If you've got a really good formulation, or not even a really good formulation, it can be overused. You know that.
Yeah.
It can be inflammatory too. I love a good L-ascorbic acid, but only in small doses. So if I've got a client who really loves it, the most I'll let them use it is once or twice a week.
Totally. So, and I can speak from experience, I have sensitive skin and I've had good and bad with the whole vitamin C thing. But in general, like if you're new to vitamin C, like you need to start with a small percentage in your serum, because you know there's all these brightening serums and they're all different amounts. So do you just have to be just careful and introduce them slowly?
You do. And also bear in mind that because we were talking about this earlier about percentages, that actually a 20% L-ascorbic acid has better penetration than a 30% L-ascorbic acid. So they've done clinical trials on it. And so don't always look at the percentage. The percentage doesn't always mean, in fact, very often it doesn't mean anything. I always say do your research with medical journals, but a 20% is fantastic, but ease into it.
Okay. Okay. Good tip. What is your general stance on facial oils?
Oh,
I know it's such like a hot topic right now, but I love your realness about it.
Because again,
this is something we were chatting about.
Yeah, totally. So, a facial oil cleanser, love it. Facial oil for hydration, not so much. Oil cannot hydrate. Oil's molecular weight is too big to penetrate past the stratum lucidum. The stratum lucidum is your inner dead layer. So all it can do is plump up your dead skin cells and make them feel soft. Oil is a great protector. So if someone really loves an oil, I'll say, okay, it's the very last thing you put on because it can protect, has no ability to hydrate the skin whatsoever. And people don't like it when I say that because they're either an oil brand or they're someone who lives and breathes for oils. Mm-hmm. And I think if you use an oil, fine, put a clinical hydrator underneath because it's not going to hydrate you. Mm-hmm. So personally, I don't like them. And I would never ever recommend somebody use an oil on their face. But if they do, I teach them what kind of where to put it into their routine. However, an oil cleanser I do love.
Okay. And so essentially it's just sitting on the top of your
It's filling in the gaps between the cells in your outer two dead layers. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't change the functionality of your skin in any way, shape, or form.
Sure. What about mixing it with your makeup to give you like a glow during the day, then that's kind of a best utilization.
Perfect.
Okay, perfect. So it's just using it the right way.
To completely understand. I always say manage your expectations. So
yeah.
Oskia Skincare has this great illuminating sort of serum oil, and I think it's magical mixed with a foundation.
Mm. Okay. Amazing. So a little bit of a curveball, but what are your thoughts on Botox? Is it true that it's preventative? Like, I'm curious what your sort of general take is.
So I'll start with saying I'm not a doctor. I don't believe it's preventative. I think there's been too many studies done saying that it actually causes muscle atrophy in other areas. So we end up having to go further and further out in the face. This is really my bugbear with, I'm not into Botox fillers or anything. I have a 26-year-old daughter who's almost 27. As a mother, and I get quite emotional about this, I want her to be okay with herself. I want her to feel like she's good enough. And if I start doing it myself or bringing it into the clinic, and we've been asked many, many, many times to bring it into the clinic,
sure,
I'm then negating everything I've tried to ever teach her. And I want her to be comfortable in her own skin. It's really simple. If we hydrate our skin and protect our skin with SPF, we will age slower and we will not have to do those things. And I never understand why someone would rather go spend a lot of money to stick a needle in their face than to actually start just protecting their skin. It makes no sense to me. I have lots of clients who do it and I never, ever say a word. I never put them down. It's not how I work, but as a mother and as a clinic owner, I cannot do it. I cannot look my daughter in the eye and go, yeah, you are perfect the way you are, if I'm allowing it to happen either to me or in the clinic.
So sure.
That's kind of
sure. Well, you're kind of an amazing example of that in the sense of you're in your 50s and you don't have like one line on your face. Like,
well,
you obviously
I do,
you treat your face, like you said, just taking care of it in the best way. So kind of a last couple questions for you. So at Mortar and Milk, you have a very specific, like, curated selection of brands. How do you choose the brands that kind of make your way into the clinic?
Yeah. So it's a weird one because when we first started, I had this belief that I could take sort of more natural or oil skincare and blend it with clinical. I really wanted to make that happen. And what I learned was I can't make that happen because, again, as I mentioned to you during treatment, I cannot look someone in the eye who's got a skin condition and tell them that something's going to work when it's not. So we've really kind of moved out of having sort of the sort of more natural, you know, organically oily type skincare and moved into clinical. I look at results. So I look at clinical trials. I look at ingredients. If a brand has ingredients that I like and I know that work, and I'm lucky because I get to see how ingredients work on skin. I feel sorry for doctors sometimes because they don't get the opportunity to spend much time with their clients, whereas I get loads of time and I get to see them time after time after time and watch how things work. So I feel very lucky in that sense. There are particular ingredients I don't like. If a brand is carrying those ingredients, I won't bring it in. And also it has to be clinical.
Sure. So you're just, obviously you're very, very careful about which brands are kind of making their way in.
Yeah.
As like a final question, what are some of these brands and maybe some product recommendations for the audience who's maybe like looking to revamp their current routine?
Okay, so my favorite product in the world is, and if you've read anything about me, anyone will know this, is a product by Exuviance called Skinrise Bionic Tonic Pads. They're complete and utter faff, and I totally know that, but they are life-changing. So that's that. For acne, there's a brand called Clinicept. So we use that thing that smells like chlorine.
Okay.
Kills bacteria like nobody's business and can be, for someone with acne, absolute game changer. It's £15. So if someone's on a small budget, they can go buy a simple creamy cleanser and a simple SPF and then put that Clinicept in the middle and it will actually change their skin. What other things do I love? I love Hydrafirm from Exuviance. I'm a massive Exuviance fan. There's a brand called Cosmetics, so Cosmedix.
Yes.
And they have an eye cream called Eye Genius, which is genius.
Okay.
It's incredible. I really like their products. They're chirally correct, which I really love. That's a whole nother story. But really great, great brand. Medicate does excellent retinols, but use them correctly. What other brands? Again, HelioCare for sunscreen.
Okay.
I'm pretty limited in the brands that I trust, but those are kind of my favorites.
Okay, amazing. We're going to include tons of links so people can kind of explore some of these. I'm sure they're new to some people. So thank you so much for coming on. This was so fun. And thanks for having me in.
Yeah.
My face feels glowy already.
It is still glowing. You've got a couple masks on, so you're going to be dewy all day.
Perfect.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thank you. But before you go, where can everyone keep up with you and find Mortar and Milk and all of that jazz?
So we're terrible at social media. So we've got Instagram for Mortar and Milk, and I have an Instagram. We're slow, but it's all, you know, if you read our content, it's funny. We like to think we're funny.
Absolutely.
So it's slow, but it's good. And then we've got a website, mortarandmilk.com. I'm in treatment all the time, so we're not very good at being out in the world.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Okay, perfect. Well, thank you again so much for coming on. And thank you all for listening. Please don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review if you found this episode helpful. And we will catch you all next time. See ya.